When it comes to shamelessly over-the-top sporting events, the Super Bowl is peerless. A February staple in the American sporting calendar sees a four-hour extravaganza watched by an estimated 200 million people around the world. In the States, the Super Bowl is a nationwide cultural occasion, the sort of thing that forces electricity boards to steel themselves, a mass event that makes a noticeable mark on the economy. Advertisers must pay $7 million for a 30-second ad slot. And, by far my favourite Super Bowl stat, the poultry industry alone sees 1.5 billion chicken wings eaten in one night. The Super Bowl transcends its sport, with non-football fans drawn to the spectacle. The fireworks, the A-listers in the crowd, the multi-million dollar halftime show. You don't need to know your sack from your safety to enjoy the festivities. In Britain, we save our pomp and ceremony for royal occasions. But over the Atlantic, the glitz and the glamour are to be found in elite sport. Their kings and queens aren't born in palaces. They're made on turf. But these sporting monarchs don't wear crowns on their heads. In American sport, the treasure is to be found on the fingers of its champions. It's a tradition that is almost 100 years old, and it's one that has created as many off-field capers as on-field legends. It's time to unwrap the history, the allure, the craft, and the intrigue behind the Super Bowl's championship rings. This is Unsung, introducing the sports stars you don't know, telling the stories you can't miss. My name is Alexis James, and this is Gridiron Bling, a peculiar history of Super Bowl rings. To those who follow American football, Vince Lombardi needs no introduction. Revered as one of the greatest and most inspirational coaches in the history of the sport, Lombardi led the Green Bay Packers to five NFL championships and two Super Bowl titles.
Thousands of people here in the stands, and there are millions of people on television, and everyone looking and all with speculation to see what kind of a game the Green Bay Packers are going to play today. Right?
Right.
I want you to be proud of your profession. It's a great profession. You'd be proud of this game, and you can do a great deal for football today. Great deal for all the players in the league and everything else. Go out there and play this ball game like I know you can play it.
Such is Lombardi's legacy that the Super Bowl trophy itself is named in his honour, and so it should come as no surprise that he's also credited with designing the original Super Bowl ring. He came up with the one-carat, single-diamond design after his Packers team won the first-ever Super Bowl in 1967.
For the first time in 7 years, Vince Lombardi's Packers, 35-10 victors over Kansas City, can claim an indisputable world championship.
But Lombardi was only following a trend already long established in the States. The NBA has been awarding its best basketballers rings since 1947, while Babe Ruth's 1927 World Series ring earned actor Charlie Sheen over $2 million when he sold the prized memorabilia in 2017. Lombardi wanted to craft that first ring in his own image, and sought the help of Minneapolis-based jewellers Jostens, who've since designed 37 of the 57 Super Bowl rings in existence. It featured the Lombardi coat of arms, along with the coach's personal motto, harmony, courage, valour. This personalisation set a precedent that has been followed by generations of NFL greats since, and ensured that America's top jewellers are always striving to improve on previous designs. The result is that when the Kansas City Chiefs won the Super Bowl in 2024, their championship bling made Lombardi's original effort look like a toy in a Christmas cracker.
The Kansas City Chiefs Super Bowl 58 ring is handcrafted excellence, created in 10-karat gold with diamonds and rubies that commemorates the 2023 season. The top features the logo crafted from 16 rubies, symbolic of the 16 outright division championship titles. The arrowhead is set with 50 diamonds, paying tribute to the Chiefs' home scoring ability where they outscored opponents by 50 points. Handcrafted with 529 diamonds and 38 rubies, totaling approximately 14.8 carats of gemstones. This ring is worthy of back-to-back Super Bowl champions.
The rings have become part of a national mythos, the American dream cast in gold. For players, they're not just fancy mementos. They're symbols of sporting history that they themselves helped to forge. Legendary quarterback Tom Brady has almost as many rings as he has fingers, and seeing him display all seven at once is the ultimate flex.
When I look at 7 Super Bowl wins, yeah, that's amazing for me. But the best part is sharing 7 Super Bowl wins with the most amazing teammates and coaches and organization and fans, because then it just grows exponentially in you and you feel so much more joy than, you know, celebrating yourself. It's never about celebrating yourself. It's about celebrating the success with so many other people.
In America, they load their champions with bullish, oversized bravado in ways that we're never quite comfortable doing with our sporting heroes here in Britain. Our winners must be humble, or they'll find a mob of tabloid hacks scurrying through their bins. But the irony of this overt display of American capitalism is that it seems to be overcompensating for one of the world's most egalitarian and, dare I say it, socialist sports leagues. The NFL features franchises, not clubs, who are never threatened with relegation. They all adhere to the same squad salary cap and sign up to a draft recruitment system that allows those finishing at the bottom of the pile to choose the best new talent next time around. Players, are traded like football stickers, with little agency in where their careers will play out. But while it's the franchise owners who collect the trophy, the rings are the players' rewards for going where they were told and rising to the top on the most level of playing fields. As such, the rings are embedded within American culture. You'll have seen them referenced in The Simpsons or in films like Jerry Maguire or The Blind Side. You might even remember the championship rings form the central plot to Ace Ventura, Pet Detective.
What ring?
The 1984 Dolphin AFC Championship ring. I find the ring with the missing stone. I find Snowflake.
How are you going to do that?
Simple.
The rings are central to the storytelling of America's favourite sport. And there are many ways to tell a story. After the break, we meet the jeweller who carves sporting tales into gold. On the 22nd of March, I'll be doing a live recording of the Unsung podcast at the Morpeth Book Festival in Northumberland. I'll be sharing some previously untold stories relating to my Unsung book and the podcast, along with an exciting new publication that I'll be revealing more about very soon. Tickets are only a fiver, and if nothing else, I'll give you some tips on the best pubs in Morpeth. To book, just hit the link in the show notes or head to ticketsource.co.uk and search for Alexis James. The show is called Not All Heroes Wear Kits and will take place at the Morpeth Library. I look forward to seeing some of you there. And if you can't make it that far north, don't worry. I'll see you at the Wembley gig. And by that, I mean, you can email in questions instead. Now, back to the episode.
It's deeply rooted in American education, right? So when people in high school graduate high school, they get like a high school ring. When you graduate college, you get a college ring. There's a lot of fraternities, men's fraternities, and social clubs where they get a membership ring. So I think the ring symbolizes something, and I think it transitioned its way into the world of sports. They wanted something to celebrate their victory, a testament to their accomplishment. And I think that if you go back 50 years, they had rings, but they were very small and understated. Whereas now it's less of a practical piece of jewelry and more of a trophy.
This is Jason Arashabin, AKA Jason of Beverly Hills. He began by selling silver trinkets in college, but these days he's got jewelry shops in Las Vegas, Miami, and Tokyo, along with his headquarters in LA. Google his name and you'll see it alongside the biggest names in entertainment. Justin Bieber came knocking when he wanted a gem-encrusted figure of Stewie Griffin from Family Guy. Ahead of his 2025 world tour, Drake commissioned Jason for a 250-carat diamond chain. Other clients include Jennifer Lopez, Matthew McConaughey, and Kim Kardashian.
We're in the business of getting very unusual requests all the time. In our regular day-to-day business with our clients, we've had people that wanted rings with their faces on it. People want rings that can open up and contain ashes of their deceased loved ones. Like, we've had lots of crazy requests.
But Hollywood's go-to jeweler began to cast his golden glare further afield and caught the eye of the biggest names in American sport. In 2009, the LA Lakers, featuring the late, great Kobe Bryant, asked their local jeweler to make their championship ring.
As the buzzer sounds, it's official. The Lakers are NBA champions once again. LA wins the 2009 NBA title.
More than a decade on, having established himself in the NBA, making custom rings for legends like Steph Curry and LeBron James, Jason disrupted Johnson's near monopoly on the Super Bowl when he was picked to design the winning rock for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. It turned out he'd received a ringing endorsement from a certain Bucs quarterback well accustomed to championship jewelry.
When the Tampa Bay Buccaneers won the Super Bowl, we had numerous clients on that team, including Tom Brady, who went to ownership and said they wanted to have something different.
Brady had been impressed by Jason's work on the basketball rings and wanted a similar treatment for his record-breaking seventh.
We did the Los Angeles Lakers championship rings in 2020, and I believe that when some of the players saw that ring, they saw the difference. They went to ownership and they said, listen, we want Jason to be able to make this ring, which allowed me to put my hat in the race and eventually get the contract.
With the most successful player in NFL history holding significant sway, Jason got to work. It takes around 4 months to produce the rings, and the process begins the moment the full-time whistle goes. But no sooner. Pitching designs before the game would aggrieve notoriously superstitious footballers.
Immediately following the Super Bowl, companies will reach out and we'll start sending in design ideas. After we get the contract, we really sit down with the creative team, the management, the ownership, and sometimes the players. It's really up to the team who they're going to let into that room. And then we write out a storyline of the team, their record, monumental statistics. Then we want to know about the organization as a whole, all of the color palette, their logos, the primary logo, the secondary logo. Then we want to understand the city. What are the important monuments in the city, symbolism of the city, mantras of the city, things like that. Then we want to talk about the team and its players. Was there a certain saying that was talked about in the locker room that the players followed? Was there certain statistics or interesting tidbits of the season that the players thought were important? And we take this entire storyline of the team, the organization, the players, and the city in the season, and we try to build a story into the design of the ring.
Desperate to make his mark, Jason also came up with another innovation, a removable lid with hidden compartments.
When we had the ring, we wanted to tell an even better story. And what better way to tell a better story than to create additional real estate in the ring? And the only way to do that was to have a removable top so that you can put more elements of the city, more elements of the team, more stories to tell within the ring.
Underneath the lid was a hand-engraved Raymond James Stadium, commemorating the Bucs becoming the first team in history to win the Super Bowl on home turf. Its 319 diamonds represented the 31-9 scoreline. Having raised the bar on what players could expect of their rings, not to mention the fact of Jason's home city, it was no surprise when he won the contract for the winning LA Rams team a year later. Again, the ring featured a removable top, plus inventive new elements that Jason couldn't wait to share.
The LA Rams ring was probably my favorite ring. It's not only the top came off and showed the ring, but we also had a piece of the ball that was used in the Super Bowl on the inside of the cap. You know, we had the field. We did a statuette of the stadium. And on the field, the green that's on the field is made up of remnants of the actual turf the players played on. So I think it tells such a great story. So many storylines and Easter eggs within that ring that it makes for an amazing storytelling experience when you're showing the ring.
If the level of detail and intricacy involved is a little staggering, wait till you discover how many are produced. Needless to say, there's a good reason why Jason wanted to muscle in on this market.
The team controls the budget. The NFL does contribute some, which is unlike some of the other leagues. Ultimately, the decision lies in the hands of ownership of that particular organization on how big they're going to go, how flashy, how expensive, and how over the top.
There are around 50 players in an NFL squad, but owners, management, and dozens of coaches also get to add to their jewelry collection. Medics, cheerleaders, and stadium staff have also been known to benefit. The NFL is thought to offer around $5,000 per ring, with franchise owners left to foot a considerable remainder on the bill. Jason remembers the generosity of LA Rams owner Stan Kroenke.
Some owners want it just for the players and upper management, whereas other owners will get the players, upper management, and every single employee down to the part-time person who's sweeping the floors. It'll be everybody. So, for example, the Los Angeles Rams, Stan Kroenke was very generous and literally gave a ring to everybody. Mr. Kroenke and his family delivered them a ring. Amazing.
It's certainly amazing for the chosen jeweler, often invoicing for hundreds of pieces of jewelry. In 2024, ESPN reported that the Kansas City Chiefs paid between $30,000 and $50,000 a piece for 400 rings.
typically, you know, it'll be done in tiers, right? So you have the players level, players and owners are a certain level tier ring, and then it'll trickle down from there depending on stature within the organization.
So while the dinner ladies in the Kansas City canteen may not be boasting a gem as weighty as Chiefs quarterback Patrick Mahomes, it'll still be worth a pretty penny. When the ring belonging to former New York Giants linebacker Lawrence Taylor was sold at auction in 2012, it went for a whopping $230,000. Which all means that some nefarious types, from petty thieves and criminal syndicates to Vladimir Putin, will do anything to get their hands on one. Coming up in part 3, discover the dastardly heists, daring capers, and miraculous recoveries involving Super Bowl rings. All after this short break. If you like the stories we tell on the Unsung podcast, then make sure to sign up for our off-field newsletter. We bring you monthly tales from the fringes of sport and society. The untold and unsung. In other words, the things and people you don't usually read about. You'll also stay up to date with our latest storytelling projects in audio, digital, and print. Subscribe for free over at off-field.net. Given the astronomical sums involved, it's no wonder that these hallowed bands attract even more attention long after they've been worn on the field. Super Bowl champions brave enough to take their rings to community speaking engagements must be extra vigilant. Three-time winner Darren Woodson, now in his mid-50s, ties his three rings to a chain before passing them into the audience. Then he tells them, "I'm the all-time leading tackler for the Dallas Cowboys, and I've got one more tackle left in me if you try to break for the door." Even nursery kids can't be trusted. When former Pittsburgh Steelers quarterback Terry Hanratty took his two rings into his daughter's kindergarten class, one went missing. A panicked teacher eventually found it wedged in a young lad's textbook. The little scamp was trying to steal a gem that could probably fit around his wrist. And he's not the only one. Thefts over the years have ranged from opportunist nabs to warehouse heists by sophisticated criminal gangs. Nearly 30 years after an MVP performance at the 1981 Super Bowl, Oakland Raiders quarterback Jim Plunkett had a bum bag containing his wallet and rings stolen from his car. A year later, he received a phone call from a builder who was working on the house next door. The bum bag had been found in the neighbour's hedges. The wallet was long gone, but the thieves hadn't spotted the ring in a separate pocket. In 2008, 27 Super Bowl rings and gems worth around $2 million were stolen from jeweler E.A. Dion in Massachusetts. The rings had been custom made for the New York Giants, who defeated the previously unbeaten New England Patriots at Super Bowl 42. The ringleader who orchestrated the elaborate heist was criminal mastermind Sean Murphy. He'd devised the plan to use a signal jammer to prevent any alarm from reaching the police while the crew cut through the roof to access the secure facility. Murphy was eventually caught and convicted after a former girlfriend testified against him. And, in a twist of fate that added a new layer to this crime caper, it turned out that he was a Patriots fan. As he told ESPN, his team might have lost, but he was determined to get his hands on those rings.
At that time, I was looking to do a jewelry manufacturer because the price of gold was going up. I went into the library and got a list of all the jewelry manufacturers in the New England area. When I got to EA Dion, I Googled it, and an article came out that said that they were making the New York Giants Super Bowl rings, and I was like, holy s***. When I realized that one of the places that I hit had their Super Bowl rings, I was like, them Giants, they don't deserve it. They didn't deserve them rings.
But perhaps the strangest case is the one that sees Patriots silver on display in the Kremlin. Following a 2005 meeting in St. Petersburg between Vladimir Putin and the New England Patriots owner Robert Kraft, the Russian president took a shine to his visitor's digit diamonds. According to Kraft, Putin placed the Super Bowl 39 ring on his finger and uttered the words, "I could kill someone with this," then walked off surrounded by KGB henchmen. At the time, a dejected Pats owner was asked by the Bush administration to play down the furore and insist it was a gift. He duly released a statement saying he'd offered the ring as a symbol of the respect and admiration that I have for the Russian people and the leadership of President Putin. But Kraft would reveal the truth about pickpocket Putin some years later. In 2024, on Netflix's The Roast of Tom Brady, he said this.
"And one more thing. In case Vladimir Putin you're watching, give me my fucking ring back, will you?"
Sadly, some footballers, bankrupt and downtrodden, have been forced to auction their prized asset. Ray Guy, considered the best punter of all time, was ordered by a judge to sell his three rings to pay off debts in 2011. In 2022, when Patriots defensive tackle Vince Wilfork discovered that his two Super Bowl rings were gone, he was informed by a fan that they were being sold at an online sports memorabilia forum. It turned out that the person offering the rings had previously purchased them from someone Wilfork knew very well, his son. DeAndre Holmes Wilfork was sentenced to 5 years probation and community service for stealing and selling his father's jewellery. Other sorry tales have had happier endings. When New York Jets center John Smith lost his Super Bowl III ring while surfing in Hawaii in 1971, he probably never expected to be reunited with it 40 years later.
I never surfed before. We were out there for 3 or 4 hours, and then, you know, we go back to shore, and I'm dragging the board back to the shack that I rented it from, and there's no lump on my right hand. And I want to tell you, I mean, I was in tears. I mean, I was crying. I get a phone call from Bob Parente, the vice president of the Jets. He says, Schmitty, are you sitting down? And I said, yeah, I'm sitting down. He said, no, you're really sitting down. I said, what the heck is the big deal? I'm sitting down. He says, well, the big deal is that a lady called us from Honolulu, and she has your Super Bowl ring that you lost 40 years ago.
A lifeguard had found it while snorkeling, then stashed it in his closet for years. When the lifeguard died in 2011, his great-niece discovered the ring and tracked down Schmidt, who would befriend the family and visit them in Hawaii.
That the Jets won the Super Bowl and got this ring, that's one miracle. Losing the ring, having it and more than a quarter of a mile out, offshore, and having somebody find it. And then we got it back, half a world away, 40 years later. Got two miracles.
Then there was Jerry Kramer's ring from the very first Super Bowl. Despite its historical significance, he managed to leave it behind in an airport toilet in 1981. It wouldn't be seen for 25 years when he was finally reunited with his lost treasure.
Coach Lombardi had a profound impact on my life, and my experience with the Green Bay Packers was a life-changing event, and this ring represents all of that.
Overjoyed at its return, he auctioned off his replacement ring and used the money to launch the Gridiron Greats Assistant Fund, which offers financial grants and medical assistance to retired NFL players in need. New England defensive back Jared Cherry was another who used his prize to benefit others. The $180,000 he received for his 2002 Super Bowl ring went to charities to help orphaned children in Thailand, Cambodia, and India. Quite what this year's cohort of Super Bowl champions will end up doing with their rings is anyone's guess. But if history is anything to go by, these twinkling masterpieces won't disappear quietly into a vault. Which feels apt, given that there is nothing quiet about the life of a Super Bowl ring. Even the day they're handed out involves a decadent ring ceremony, when jewellers like Jason get to see what their handiwork means to the players who've dreamt of this moment for years.
They dedicate an entire night for the players, their families, and the team to gather together and have a big old party, and everyone gets their rings that day. They get to enjoy it, and most importantly, I get to see the faces of each and every player as they open the box. I get to see their eyes widen up, smile on their face. I can see the excitement in their eyes, and for me, that's the biggest joy in the world.
You know, it's an amazing thing what we're about to receive, and we talked about it a little bit in the locker room before the game. A night like this is about what this means for us and obviously what this means for our family for life. You know, you're going to be able to show this ring for the rest of our life, and we're going to know what went into it. We're going to know what we learned from it. We're going to know about the memories, the experiences, and the relationships that we've had from this.
So whether you think championship rings are a gaudy symbol of American brashness or a proud tradition lording elite sporting achievement, you might want to get used to it, as there have been some recent hints that it might just catch on closer to home. After Chelsea's Champions League win in 2012, Jason was contacted by none other than Didier Drogba, the Ivorian striker who scored the winning penalty.
He's done it! The greatest night in the history of Chelsea Football Club! European champions! They've beaten Bayern in their own backyard! They found the Holy Grail after a venture fraught with danger! And Drogba may never play for Chelsea again.
Drogba paid a reported £800,000 for a set of exclusive rings to commemorate Chelsea's Champions League victory, which he then handed out to teammates including John Terry and Ashley Cole. further highlighting the differences in taste and culture over the pond. The Daily Mail described the concept as tacky. French stars Paul Pogba and Antoine Griezmann are other footballers who've contacted Jason to help commemorate their successes. The pair ordered rings for every member of France's 2018 World Cup winning squad, while Griezmann ordered another following Atletico Madrid's Super Cup victory over rivals Real Madrid that same year. Jason thinks it's a sign of things to come.
The world is a lot smaller place now than it was 15 years ago, right? So with the advent of social media and everything like that, all the European clubs and players, they see what the Americans are getting to celebrate their victory. They also visit here and become friends with a lot of these American athletes. I think a lot of the European players want to have something like that. And I'm seeing more and more, like we've had, you know, Antoine Griezmann of France. He's with Atletico Madrid. He would call us up and say, can you make championship rings for all my teammates? So we're getting the calls, but the calls are coming primarily from the players themselves because they want it that badly. We have yet to see an actual team kind of jump on board and embrace this, what's considered an American tradition, but I think it's coming very, very soon.
But while Jason welcomes the increasing interest from European stars, there's only one job on his mind when February comes around.
Whoever wins the Super Bowl, they can expect to hear from me the very next morning. We are already prepping and we're excited at the opportunity.
Thanks for listening to Unsung. This episode was based on an original written feature for Reader's Digest. It was written and narrated by me, Alexis James, and produced by Matt Cheney. Artwork is by Matt Walker, and the executive producer is Sam Barry. Many thanks to Jason Arashavan for speaking to me in January 2023. Unsung is an off-field production, bringing you the untold and unsung in audio, digital, and print. To enjoy more of our storytelling, head to off-field.net. Catch you next time on Unsung.